From Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome into the Wednesday edition of The Drive. Another beautiful day. I mean, it just feels like, you know, for quite a while, we've just had gorgeous days. Hardly a cloud in the sky. It's October, so it's dry, but it has been very pleasant. We have sort of gotten into a fall feel here, and hope everybody enjoying it. We are, as we come to you here on the Wednesday Drive, Bill, Dan, Jason Caldwell from Auburn Undercover, all here in the studio with Drew at the controls. JC, how you doing today?
I'm doing good. Just enjoying some baseball this afternoon, and kind of went out to get a feel of what banana ball is going to look like for them Saturday night. I won't be here, and I don't know how many people will get a chance to see it other than watching it online, but went out to get a feel for that, and man, it's been a baseball kind of day.
No kidding. There's been some news.
Huge news around the league. Tony Vitello is now the manager of the San Francisco Giants.
An unprecedented move. There has never been a major league manager who had
no
major league, I mean, no professional baseball experience.
Yeah, I don't know. We're just talking about, like, there's no guarantee. Man, watching his demeanor, and obviously he'll be different. You have to be. And if he's not, it won't. But it's hard for me to envision Billy Martin being successful in this day and age. That's kind of who he reminds me of. It's like 162 games. It's hard to envision professional baseball player in week two of the regular season being fired up about a guy who just goes nutso.
I'll admit Billy Martin's a little before my time. Billy Martin was notoriously hard on his own players, right?
Like he doesn't do that. Right. But it's still the emotion.
Sure.
Like, it's hard to be emotional in baseball when you have 162
right.
games.
I think about like a Valentine, maybe, right? Like a guy who's just wore those emotions out on their sleeves and can grind you down. But no, you're right, Bill. Unprecedented. Like, we've never had a college. I mean, I don't believe that anyone has ever been hired straight from D1 baseball to manage a major league team.
Now, that may have happened.
Pat Murphy was a longtime college baseball coach, but he went back to the professional ranks and moved up a little bit.
I was thinking that there may have been somebody else who had been in professional ball, went coach college, and then got a chance to come back. But I mean, that's not what this is. This is a guy who has never had any professional.
I think something it shows you too is the difference in how Major League Baseball views college baseball now.
Well, I think that's a great point.
Until Bill, probably the mid 1990s, rarely did you see a player in the big leagues that was a college baseball player. You had a few there. You had a few here and there. They didn't draft guys from college baseball. You know.
Well, you saw a few.
There'd be some guys in there.
The Rick Mondays and Barry Bonds.
There'd be some guys in there. Know. There would be. But it was very few and far between. Most of the guys were guys that were drafted out of high school and developed and went through all these things. And now you look and it is commonplace now to see, and they get there early.
That's the other thing. I mean, college players, it was very rare. I mean, very rare. You didn't see anybody that was in the majors within a couple of years after they finished their college
days. Well, and a lot of that had to do with if you were someone that people could tab early on as a future major leaguer, the goal was to get to Major League Baseball as early as possible.
And that meant starting minor league baseball at 18.
That's exactly right.
And now it feels like you can make the, you know, you can face, not only is there an obvious quality of life advantage, but not only now you have an NIL situation where guys are getting paid legally on top of that, and you can face a level of competition that renders you, I mean, there are some guys who struggle to adjust. I mean, you're seeing some, but you're seeing more and more players who go from college to not just minor league baseball, but they're one of the top 5 or 10 prospects in minor league baseball the day they're drafted into an organization.
I think development at the college level now has become so much greater. And I'm telling you, there's 100% still something to it. You mentioned everything that goes on. If you're at Auburn, for example, the difference between being at Auburn and being, even if you're drafted in the second round, but you don't live like you're in the second round unless you get to the major leagues.
No, you're
nothing close to what you have at Auburn. Now the ballpark when you get to AA, AAA, may be similar, maybe, but how you live, how you travel, all those things, and where you stay in between games, all the things that you're now, life is much better in college baseball than it is minor leagues.
Sure, it is, because you're not having to be responsible for every single thing that your paycheck's got to cover everything. You're not getting room and board as well.
Yeah, I mean, but you're staying in better hotels.
Travel is going to be so much better.
And, but not a couple of years ago, it would have seemed pretty unthinkable for a college head coach.
It's still unthinkable for me.
I mean, this
we'll
is,
see now if he goes and is successful,
you're going to see more teams. You know, because we've seen it in college basketball to the NBA, and we've seen it college football to the NFL, and it hasn't been great.
Right.
It's a tough transition.
It hasn't worked out great because this is the first time we had a chance to test it in baseball.
Well, isn't it? I mean, you would know better than anyone that, and I know personnel departments and GMs are showing up in the college game more and more, but by and large, the biggest difference between coaching a college team in the SEC or the Big Ten and coaching a professional team is that at the college level, you are very responsible for talent acquisition.
Yes.
And at the professional level, there's a general manager and a personnel department that's making those decisions, and your job is to coach the roster that you have. Buster Posey is making a lot of those decisions in San Francisco, and one would think Buster Posey was the primary guy, thinking that Vitello
is the right energy for
this combination of players.
Yeah, but you're right. It's very, very similar because you think about it from a college standpoint, and I've said it. Look, having great players doesn't guarantee that you win, but not having them guarantees you're not going to. The most important thing in college athletics is talent acquisition. There's no second. Now, it doesn't, like I said, you look at Indiana and you look at it doesn't guarantee it, and there's some outliers. But by and large, the most important thing you can do is go get the best players you can find. Tennessee has done that in baseball. Now, all of a sudden, you got to go, how do you fit the pieces together when you're not more talented than everybody you play? That's part of it. Can you push the right buttons? And like I said, the difference between now you're like February to September where you're coaching these guys. That's a long time to go, hey, man, you know, just be involved that way in terms of major league baseball.
An act can wear thin with professionals
it sure feels like that over that period of time. And go ahead, I'll say it's not the only news of the day.
No, I was going to say one other thing to keep in mind, and we've talked about this for years, Jason, is the quality of competition that there is. Not just, I mean, the development is much, much better. And the quality, I mean, the rosters in college baseball are so much better than they used to be. You would see a player or two on the best team that you might feel like, could start right off at AA. Now, I feel like, you know, the SEC, when I look at the SEC tournament, I feel like we're just about watching AA ball.
You're watching 10 or 12 players you feel like are going to be major leaguers.
Yeah.
That's a huge difference. Now, I remember going to fall baseball practices at Auburn, and if you had a Casey Mize or you had a Chris Buchek or somebody like that, you'd have some scouts sprinkled in every day over there. Go over there today, and there's probably a dozen scouts there today just watching a scrimmage. Like, they're 12 to 15 every day. You're right. The talent level, and Butch Thompson says it all the time, look, it's the best amateur baseball in the world, and he's right. And so you start to talk about that. He won at this level. That's a really demanding league. The things he's done. I think it's ambitious for the Giants to do. But you know what? It nowadays, I commend, honestly, you know what I do? I commend somebody for not doing the same old thing.
Yeah.
When I think about growing up, whether it's baseball, the NBA, now the NFL, you look, and if your name – now, he's done a great job. But you think about it, if your last name's Schottenheimer, you're going to get a job. I used to think about Bill Fitch coached about 17 NBA teams as I was growing up. You just, right. Well, he'd go coach this team now. It's different. We'll see if it works.
Hey, you're seeing major league teams. I mean, there's all this buzz around Pujols maybe getting a job. The Angels hired Kurt Suzuki, right? Was it the Angels who hired Kurt Suzuki? Yeah, the Angels hired Kurt Suzuki, who's a longtime major league catcher. Now Tony Vitello. I mean, you're seeing some. You're not seeing the usual suspects necessarily with some of these names. And have the Braves hired anybody yet?
No.
The Braves, the Braves still looking for a manager, and we'll see if they go with someone with experience as a manager before, or if they go a little bit off the board as well.
As you said, though, Jason, that's not the only baseball news.
Yeah, Florida. Florida coach Kevin O'Sullivan, they announced that he's taking a leave of absence to deal with family and personal issues. And
man, fall ball is going on. Auburn's not the only place where fall ball is going on.
We have been hearing, obviously had the issue last year. There's been some back and forth there for a couple of years now. The interesting part of it is former Auburn player Chuck Gerolman will now be the interim coach.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
For Florida. He's been the hitting coach, bench coach for Florida for a while. Chuck will now be the interim coach for the Gators in this time being, and see what happens there.
And in the meantime, Andy Bertram reminding us yesterday, it's 10 years now with Butch Thompson.
Yep, 10 years today. So I had a chance. I talked to Hal Baird yesterday, and then texted back and forth with David Ross, and got some comments from David Ross about Butch. Just I wanted to kind of get a feel from two guys that have done it at different levels and their respect for the job that Butch has done. And so I did a story on that this morning. So it was good to get their take, and obviously Hal. You can't talk about anybody related to Auburn baseball and not talk to Hal Baird
it.
And so his thoughts on not only on the field, but the facilities, all the things that have gone along with it. I thought it was pretty good, and obviously a lot of respect there.
Yeah, looking forward to reading that when you get that put up there, Jason. 334-321-1390. We're just underway here on the Wednesday edition of The Drive.
There were some people who mentioned Gerolman for jobs this past offseason. You know, he got a lot of credit for who's the big power hitter? Caglione? He got a lot of credit for CAG's development.
I mean, they've had a bunch of guys. I mean, wasn't it outfielder for the Rangers that's played really well the last couple of years? He was fantastic out there. I mean, like they've had some guys. Jonathan India is in the major leagues, and so he's been a guy that's been heavily involved with all those guys.
All right, we're just underway here on the Wednesday Drive. Again, Bill, Dan, Jason Caldwell, anything on your mind sports-wise? And let's go ahead and get to the phone before we get to our first break. Who do we have?
KJ.
Hey, KJ.
Hey, good afternoon, guys. Called on a great day. Just listening to you guys talk about Coach Thompson. I actually had an opportunity to meet him today. He was speaking at a United Way campaign fundraising type deal this morning. I had an opportunity to meet him. He knew Coach has been at Berry College probably about 30 years now. Coach Beasley up there.
Yeah.
So we kind of have like a mutual
up
friend.
Up in Rome?
Rome, Georgia.
Yes, Berry
College.
Rome, Georgia.
That's,
yep.
You know what that is? My travels in different different activities have taken me to a lot of college campuses in my life. And I did a speech and debate tournament at Berry when I was at Northwest Florida State the night of the Auburn-Georgia game. In 05, and it is maybe the nicest college campus I've ever been to in my entire life. Berry is absolutely gorgeous.
To your point, beautiful campus. I mean, and when I tell you, you can, I don't even know if you need a rifle or a bow and arrow. You could probably tackle a deer up there.
Yeah.
But I had a question for Jason and for all you guys, really. But just. Awesome. I love the energy 10-year anniversary of Butch. He's probably in all honesty our best coach currently right now. I know maybe Graber over in gymnastics but I would probably give the crown to Butch. Love what he's been doing. I would say I wanted to ask you guys, as far as attention to detail in football practice, I know over the years you guys have covered different practices, had different types of access to it. Have you noticed discrepancies in, like, some coaching regimes compared to others? And you don't have to name names. I would love it if you did. But I was just curious if you've ever has anything ever caught your eyes as far as attention to detail, to the little things that can help you win or lose ball game.
The hard part, KJ, is that when you're, I mean, now we get almost an hour on a Tuesday, but if you're not out there all the time, it's really hard to get a feel for, because the last time we really were out there for full practices and enough to really tell was probably 2006, 2007.
Yeah, it's been Tubbs.
Is there a coach who comes to mind when someone asks you about, like, okay, so when you got to observe practice, this coach, this position coach or coordinator felt incredibly detail-oriented or incredibly involved?
It's usually always a guy that's really vocal, and that's normally a defensive coordinator, because the energy level on defense is normally one that makes it jump out to you a little bit more.
I think it's really interesting. KJ, Monday, Don Dunn was in here, and we were talking about Auburn's matchup coming up with Arkansas, and Don offered up that he felt Bobby Petrino was the most detail-oriented head coach he had ever worked for, and he said that Bobby Petrino, he felt, was the best head coach he ever worked for. And that's, I mean, when he was talking about attention to detail, he said every single thing in practice, he said coaches, players, managers, trainers, doctors, I mean, everyone had to be, I mean, it had to be just right in practice. Said, amazingly, he was able to calm down a little bit once it got to game day. But in practice, he'd never seen anybody as attention detailed as Bobby Petrino.
Yeah, so back to your point, currently it doesn't feel like it's any less detailed than most of the practices we've seen recently. But, you know, it's hard to tell because you don't get a chance to go see and you don't get a chance to go see other schools. And so it's hard to know exactly what it looks like at other places, too.
Understood. I was just curious. I wasn't, you know, I'm not in the business of calling, you know, things out that I don't know about. That's why I was just curious if anything stood out to you. And it makes sense that a defensive coach would be more attention to detail because you're teaching more of a reactionary, you know, a response to the offense, even though you may be attacking at times too. Mm-hmm. So I do understand that you have to know what everyone's doing and how to respond to certain keys. So that does make sense for a defensive coach to be a lot more.
Yeah, and you think about you know, offense and it makes sense on both sides of the football. You go, man, you got all 11 guys are working in harmony, those things. But we also know that there were probably a bunch of plays in 2010. Where guys missed a block or did something, and Cam Newton covered it up. Defensively, it's hard. One guy in the wrong gap, and it doesn't. And you don't know the mistake is made until the coaches know it. But as a person, or you go, hey, that guy hit the wrong. He played the wrong gap. I was talking to a high school. I was talking to somebody talking about high school. Like, it was supposed to be man, linebacker plays zone. And everything else looks great, and you're a step behind, and you go, yeah, that's the difference in winning and losing a play.
A lot of folks, we appreciate the phone call. Good stuff from KJ. And a lot of folks defensively, sometimes you can't tell who made the mistake, and so you'll think the guy running over to recover is the one, it was his mistake. And it's like, no.
He's protecting somebody else. A lot of times it happens in the secondary where you look up and you go, man, that guy's 20 yards behind the play. What was he doing? And you go, well,
the safety's supposed to be there, and that's
why I'm always hesitant when people start talking about the offensive line, especially because that's the one you don't know what his job is, unless it's one on one. The guy gets beat. You can go, man, he got beat right there. But there's a lot of times where you go, look, I might be trying to protect another spot because my guy went the wrong way. It looks like I got beat, but technically I was in the right spot. There's lots of things that come into play. So many moving parts.
We'll get to our first break of the afternoon.
We'll talk some more offensive line probably with Jason as we
That's pretty likely. We'd love to talk with you as well. 334-321-1390 is the Drive hotline, sponsored by Skybar.
You can also text the show, 334-564-1840 on the Drive text box, presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They also sponsor the podcast, available wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
We'll get to our first break, back with more here on the Wednesday Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into The Drive here on this Wednesday afternoon. Bill, Dan, Jason Caldwell, and let's get to the Drive hotline. And John is up next. Hey, John.
Hey, guys. How are you doing?
Pretty good. Good.
Thanks again to Pat and Dan and the folks at Skybar for sponsoring the hotline. But have you seen the story about Ken Williamson being permanently suspended from calling games, conference games?
I have seen it.
I believe it's only been the Yellowhammer. The Yellowhammer News is the only source.
I'll say this, John. My guess would be, if it's legit, then it's from somebody in his family, because I don't think the SEC would ever put that out. I have actually reached out to the SEC and said, hey, will anybody there confirm if this is true? Mm-hmm. I haven't heard anything back yet.
Right.
I'm not saying it's not, but I think, you know, and here's the thing. There's no officials employed by the SEC. Now, they could say, hey, we're not going to use you in our games any longer.
Right.
But I haven't seen it. And like I said, I don't know that we would, other than somebody's going, hey, I talked to somebody, and his uncle, and he said, yes, that's true. Should it happen? It should, but I don't know. I don't know how, if it's legit or if it's a news story for me just yet.
It looked like from the article that we weren't the only school complaining on it either.
I would imagine right now that every game that's played, somebody has complaints going on about calls made. And the crazy thing is that I had the same thought, because yesterday somebody posted about calls being missed in Major League Baseball playoffs. And I said, listen, those guys are better than they've ever been, Major League Baseball umpires. But when you have frame by frame 95 mile an hour and he misses by half an inch and somebody's complaining because he missed the call, I'm like, that's pretty darn good. I think it's the same thing in football. Had we had TV reviews in 1985 in the Iron Bowl, there's probably a bunch of calls that you go, that's not right. He missed it. But we just have so many more high def options now.
I actually refereed rec league and intramural basketball back when I was in college, and thank God they didn't kill me.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't know. I hadn't heard you talk about it, but I didn't even realize that was Yellowhammer News, so I guess I need to double check my sources.
I'm not saying it's not. I'm just checking
just
into it.
I haven't seen any other outlet or you know, no other media has corroborated that.
Right, I understand. Well, somebody does need to look. I mean, you understand there are going to be missed calls, but it real. And I know I'm a homer, but God, it's just. But in the Georgia game, there were calls both ways that went bad. You know,
that's the point I tried to make too. Is that, look, the one of the worst calls of the night was the blindside block that was called after they gave them a timeout. Like, that wasn't even close to a blindside block, and they were like, well, you know, 100%. Well, there's a makeup
like
call
a makeup,
right there.
That's what
drives you even more crazy. Lots of things going on.
Jason, you're going out to Arkansas.
Going to Arkansas and make it. We're driving at this time, so we're going to get a chance to go through Memphis and find us some.
The weather doesn't look like, you know, it's been some time.
It's going to be raining. There's about a 75-80% chance of rain Saturday morning there, and 58 for the high. So it may be nice.
Yeah, it might not be beautiful. Oh man.
Okay. Well, war eagle. Yeah. Good luck. Be careful on the road.
Absolutely. Thanks, John.
Take care, John. 334-321-1390.
Yeah, I think there's going to be some wet football work for them. I bet it probably happened today. The latest latest weather. Let me see.
There's not any rain going to be rain here for a
rain
while.
Early, then remaining cloudy with showers in the afternoon. Potential for heavy rainfall. High 58 degrees. Mm. Chance of rain 60%. That's Saturday morning in Fayetteville.
And I believe we are supposed to get some rain this weekend, according to
Sunday. I think.
Apple. Yeah.
Yeah, I knew not until late, but, I mean, it's been a while. All right, let's get back to the Drive hotline, and Slack is next. Hey, Slack.
Hey, bud.
What's up, guys?
What's up, Slack?
Hey, did you get a chance to ask the AD last week about the possibility of doing what the ACC's doing, asking the commission about that?
Yes, we did. John said he didn't know that the SEC was going to do that, but it is something that he knew other schools had encouraged Greg Sankey to really strongly consider and see if they don't do that. Which, in case people don't know what you're talking about, the ACC shows the conversation between the conference office and the officials there in the stadium on replay.
And Slack, I asked at Media Days a year ago, this would have been back in 24, I asked Commissioner Sankey about, and I cited the NBA and the fact that the NBA doesn't have a replay, like for ESPN games, they don't have a replay official anymore. They're listening to the conversation between the referees and the review people, and then sort of relaying what the conversation means to the viewer. And I thought maybe with ESPN taking over all of the SEC operations, maybe we could have something like that. And I believe Sankey's answer then was, I don't see that in the future. Maybe it becomes easier to do it if other conferences are doing it, but he seemed kind of reluctant to peel back the curtain that much.
Yeah. You know, the thing that gets me, and when I sit down and I watch the NFL refs, and these guys can go ahead and make a call and stand behind, and if it's a replay, they go to replay. They get it right in the NFL. All right, the thing about the college game, okay, for instance, was it the Texas A&M game? What was it? Well, the referee was running back, and he didn't see the call. Correct. Against
Oklahoma.
What kills me is, okay, you got 7-8 more guys on the field. So why is it just that guy have to make the call? If it's a pass interference, and if whatever it is, you got other people on the field can throw a flag because he was out of position.
Yeah, it's not just him, but it's
right.
the difference in the elite of the elite, who that's their job, NFL officials.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of college football games on Saturday. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of officials you have to get through.
Now,
it just you're just not going to be as good.
In that situation with an officiating crew, like are there some referees who may think, well, there's a ref right there, so I can watch the area, I can watch the aspect of the play closest to me, and the referee, the back judge, whoever's going to be in the vicinity of the contact between the receiver and the defensive back, he's going to be the one who makes that call.
Yeah.
And so I'm not going to call from really far away a pass interference that happens right in front of him. Again, not to excuse any of this, Slack, because you're absolutely right. Like, if it happens with, all eight of those referees have flags on their belt, right?
Somebody should have noticed, or the replay official should have been able to notice.
Although that's not a PI, that's not a thing anymore.
But that's where there ought to be challenges. Regardless of whatever, you get your two or three challenges.
Would you be okay with a replay official being able to say after a play was over, hey, you guys missed DPI or you guys missed OPI?
Get it right initially. Get it right.
Well, but you're done.
Yeah.
If you're depending on these guys to get it right and you have to go to review every time that happens, your game's going to last 7 hours.
The NFL system is go ahead.
About the ball game the other night when the play was already ran and then they went back and replayed it.
Yeah, oh no, I mean that's the point, Bill. I think Bill, here's my thing. Here's what I want. Don't go back and call targeting. If you don't call it on the field, that's it. You missed it. Sorry.
Right.
If you want to challenge it,
yes,
you got two challenges.
Yeah, pick two or three, whatever.
For me, it's just like baseball going, okay, Is it worth it?
That's right.
Here's my thing. You got to decide.
I mean, if you feel like it's a game-changing moment, then absolutely you challenge it.
You challenge it. And here's my thing. All of them. Every play is available.
I agree.
We can review if that wide receiver's hiding out on the sidelines. I want to review it.
DPI. You think they missed DPI? 100%.
You can say, look, we think that's going
to
give us a first down. But yes, but we're not going to stop it every time.
No. It needs to be coach initiated. It's the NFL system. I don't think the NFL product is superior in every way. Slack. I think college football is fantastic. But I think the system for replay, turnovers and scores are automatically reviewed, and everything else needs to be initiated by a coach.
So they're automatically watching it and they're going, look, he didn't score. Hold on, we're going to take a look at this. Stop the game. Hey, his knee might have been down. That's not a fumble. Let us look at it. Other than that, play football. I think it would help. Hey, you're going to miss
some. Did he catch that 4-yard pass or not? Let's review.
That's my point right now is that they're killing it. The other night, the first possession of the game, like three reviews on plays. I'm like, listen, because I agree. I think it's whether or not that guy stepped out of bounds a half yard or a full yard short of the 10, and it's going to be 3rd and 6 or 3rd and 5.5, we do not need to stop this football game for that. Just keep playing.
No, considering you hardly ever measure anymore anyway.
They don't
the ball's a half yard shy.
I was watching a replay, Slack, of the Broncos 33-point fourth quarter because I was like, I don't see how this happened, and it happened to be on TV the other night. And late in the game, the Giants, Broncos are taking the lead. The Giants were driving back down. It's fourth down. They throw a pass, and it is a full half yard short of the line. It wasn't a yardage. It was the line, and he's waving the guy up. Now, they end up calling the roughing the passer, so they got a first down anyway. But they were fixing to wave the sticks up. He was a full half yard short. They were just going, well, come on, wave them up. I'm like, you don't measure anymore. It's either you got it or you don't. And hey, you know what? And I'm okay with it. It keeps some flow going. Keep it going. It needs to be close enough that you can do it.
I'm all for chips in the ball. And let's go ahead and
I'd like to see less interruptions.
Yes.
And more on the coaches to go. Is that worth it? And to me, it's like baseball. Is it worth it to challenge an out or safe call at first base in the first inning?
First two innings.
Yeah.
All right, we're way behind. Got to get to our bottom of the hour break. Right back with more of your phone calls. I got about 20 more minutes with Jason here on the Wednesday Drive.
And 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Wednesday Drive. Bill, Dan, Jason Caldwell here in the studio. And let's get right back to the phones. And Jeremy is up next. Hey, Jeremy.
Yeah, hey, guys. Y'all want to talk about, like, baseball umpires and officiating and how much better. Go back and watch, like, the 94 or the 93, I guess it was, like, World Series games and stuff, and watch the strike zone of those guys back then.
Yeah, 18 feet wide.
depends on the pitcher and the ump.
Yeah. Yes.
It depended on the pitcher. It depended on the umpire. Yep. Like, people have no idea. And listen, me and my 11-year-old and 8-year-old during the Auburn-Georgia game were having this conversation. They were, of course, going nuts about the spot of the ball and all this. And, like, me sitting there and explaining to them, like, even the guys that we don't think are very good at what they're doing, a college official's ability to spot a football and with everything that's going on around them, they are so good at their job. I know we think they're not great a lot of the times, and they absolutely miss calls, and you think, oh, that's so obvious. How did you miss that? But watch what they do, the mechanics of what they do. People really don't know the work those guys put in. And I'm not trying to stick up for every one of them. There are some awful ones out there. But, like, these guys are really good at what they do.
Well, there's a lot of work that's involved in
it. Yeah, and like I said, I agree. I think the technology with replays and instantaneous replays have made it really difficult.
That's where it makes it seem like, oh, it's so easy because you get to see so many different views.
That is really fast. And for me, being on the field for 27 years doing this, I mean, it's a different world in the NFL, but people don't realize how fast it is at this level when you're there and you go, man, this thing is happening so quickly. Because, like, to me, like face mask, all those things, sometimes it's really hard to get because they might grab a guy's collar and it looks like his face mask or like, it's really hard.
And like you start talking about like defensive pass interference and all of that kind of stuff. You and I could both watch the same play, and one of us is going to say that's defensive pass interference, and the other one is not.
Right.
And
I'll give you a great example of that is the play where a lot of folks thought Bo Prabula wasn't out of the tackle box and threw it away, and I thought it's like no, the tackle box is surprisingly small. You know, from each side of the ball, like and they'll usually give the quarterback the benefit of that. If you're in the pocket, you're in the pocket. But once you start to scramble, you know they'll give you the benefit of the doubt on a tackle box sort of deal. And there were people were furious in that stadium that there wasn't a flag for intentional grounding on a play that I thought was.
We would all be healthier individuals if we did away with it. I'm all for it. Like. Whatever the guy calls on the field, that's what we're going to live with.
Yeah, here's the thing. You'd have to tell TV and people in the stadium
not to show it.
Because if you didn't, people would lose their minds.
Got to get rid of TiVo. Got to get rid of DVRs.
At least at that point, we all know what we're signing up for. We all know what we get. Like, you do away with the conspiracy of, oh, somebody in Birmingham is trying to screw Auburn.
Yeah. Unfortunately, it's only going to go the other direction. It's only going to get worse and worse with more technology we have. We're going to have more and more of involvement.
I do hope, sort of getting back to a point we made with, I think it was on the Slack call, Jeremy, where it's like it's a game flow issue more than when you make everything reviewable from the booth, the game can be interrupted so often on plays that don't feel like they're critical to the outcome of this football game.
Right.
And if it's that important, let a coach call a timeout and initiate a challenge that way.
Bring the challenge system in. These coaches get paid enough money. They got enough time on their hands. They can figure out when and where to throw that.
Because I think right now, and I think that Ken Williamson crew is the worst of the bunch, it almost feels like they're waiting for the safety net. Like where they won't make a call. You're like,
hey. They're afraid. Because
I was like, dude, they might as well not even be here. They just run the game from Birmingham, and then if you need to stop it, but let's just play this like a scrimmage. I think the officials have gone like, oh, well, they'll fix this. We're okay. Let's just go make a call. Go do it, and then we'll move on.
Well, and then you're going to get into the what is the purpose of replay. If it's to get it right, the call on the field shouldn't matter. Like, that guy should – you should bring somebody in who has not seen what's going on. They don't know what the call is. Here's the video. Tell us what happened.
Yep, and like I said, if you start going, look, we're going – yeah, I was using that as an example. Like, you can't do that because it would take 18 years to play a football game. But I think the officials, if they knew, look, we're not going to be over here all night looking over your shoulder – they're going to have a couple of challenges, and that's it. We're moving this game forward. Then you've got to be really decisive on your calls. Mm-hmm. Right now it feels like, oh, man, oh, well, we'll just make this call because we know they're going to review it.
We'll make the safe call.
Yeah. No, we're not doing that. You make a call, and then if somebody wants to challenge, they can.
Good stuff, Jeremy. Appreciate it.
334-321-1390. We'll get one more before our final break of the hour. Inspector is next. Hey, Inspector.
Hey, guys. I guess you know what I want to talk about. Offensive line, you know, I told y'all guys early in the season, God forbid one of these guys go down with an injury. Well, it's happening. And the guy we brought in to play left tackle is now moving to center or trying out for center.
Right tackle, actually.
Yeah, I think they just took a look at him this week to see what it would look like.
Do you expect Ellis, not to cut you off, Spectre, do you expect Ellis to take most of the snaps at center?
I think Kyle Ellis will be the guy at center, yes.
Yeah, I do too. This jockeying around of tackles is uncalled for. We've had a problem with tackles, and now we need not move them around. Ellis can handle the job. I mean,
yeah, I think this is all year long. Sorry to cut you off, but I think all year long you go, hey, what happens if we need the next one? You have to get, okay, what happens if we need the next center?
Yeah, now you've got to have, in case something happens to Kale, so let's look at
the next guy. What would we do here? I think that's really been more of what it was.
You're right, though, Specter. I mean, you'd rather not move one of your starting tackles, away from there.
Yes, exactly. Well, you know, I hate to say it, but these next five games, now they have a crutch. They can cry on about the offensive line now.
I don't think people are going to pay that much attention.
I don't think that's going to be anything that – I don't think – I mean, look, Kale Ellis, Kale Ellis played fine. I mean –
I thought he blocked pretty dang well.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to be something that is going to be used or anybody's going to worry about even if it is used. Yeah.
Yep, I hope you're right. Listen, the other thing I want to talk about is replacing Jackson. I doubt that will ever happen. The last 2 years, Thorne was never replaced.
Yeah, he was.
Hold on a minute. Everybody kept complaining until finally they threw our quarterback room out there and let them kill themselves, and then they brought him out and never played him again. And he's not going to do it. I can tell you right now, he's not going to pull Jackson.
I'd be surprised if Auburn struggles Saturday if Jackson stays in.
I agree.
Well, if they struggle and if Jackson struggles, the only thing Jackson is doing is holding the ball. There's nothing wrong with his running ability. There's nothing wrong with his mechanics of throwing the ball. And when he overthrows or short throws, it's because he's not getting the protection. Now, if he's pulled from the game and Daniels comes in, who hadn't played a lick in the last five games, or what is it, eight games?
This will be eight.
Yeah, exactly. And the same thing happened last year when our quarterback room got out there, and they hadn't played all year long. Everybody was expecting miracles, and they messed up because they didn't have the experience behind them.
Yeah, so, the difference is Hank Brown had never played. Ashton Daniels has played a bunch of football.
Yeah, he has started a lot of games.
And so he hasn't played at Auburn, but right. he has played a bunch of football prior to this.
So it won't be as big a shock.
I think Jackson, Specter, I think you're right. I think Jackson's been sort of tap dancing on the edge of do you need to make a move or not. And I was, I thought he showed some progress, although critical downs continue to be a problem, critical moments, the biggest moments, which – you know, that's a damning indictment of a quarterback when you say critical moments are a problem.
That's it.
And I thought that overtime was maybe some of the lowest points of the year, which I think puts a lot of pressure on if he's the starter, and those are all the indications for Saturday. I don't know how many three and outs you could survive early on before there's pressure to create a spark and make a move and just try something else offensively.
One last thing. You guys realize we're duplicating the schedule of 23. We had three wins in the beginning.
Oh, okay.
Lost the next four, and now the only team that's not on this list from 23 is Kentucky. Kentucky wasn't on in 23. We had Mississippi State, Vanderbilt, Arkansas, and New Mexico State. In 23. Mm-hmm. And this time we got Arkansas, still got Vandy, but we got Kentucky replacing Mississippi State and Mercer replacing New Mexico State. So we should win at least two, if not three, of those games.
Arkansas, they should.
I think Kentucky, Mercer, and then to me this Saturday you start going. I mean, you're playing. I think the best offense you played all year.
Yep.
I think it's the best offense you played all year. Now it's probably the worst defense outside Ball State that you played all year too. Mm-hmm. But I think you got to score points. And can you go score enough points? I mean that's a question. Now Notre Dame held Arkansas to 13. Nobody else held them under 30. What's that look like Saturday? Because I mean that's it. Can you score enough points?
Can the defense keep answering the bell?
All right, we've got to get to our final break. Appreciate the call, Specter. Back to wind things down for hour number one here on the Wednesday Drive. Final minute or so of hour number one. Russ, we've got just a few seconds. You want to You want to go ahead or you want to hang on?
I just really have two comments. First of all, Shohei Ohtani is the greatest baseball player in the history of Major League Baseball.
I can't argue much with
Love it.
You know, with
you will never, no one alive has seen a better baseball player than him, and you can't name two other players that are even close.
Nope.
Maybe Babe Ruth, but no one alive has seen him play.
No, you're absolutely right.
And then the bad side of this, or the negative side, is that Auburn is completely irrelevant in football, not only in the country, but especially in the SEC. And it's heartbreaking. It makes me sick.
It is tough. Jason, man, time has flown. Let everybody know how they can keep up with everything you guys have got
going. Check us out, auburnundercover.com, part of the 24/7 network. All the social media platforms, all those things. So check us out there. ITAT Jason from me, and get ready for Saturday.
Have a safe trip. Back with hour two.
Dixie Electric.
Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama. This is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome in to hour number two here on this Wednesday. Welcome into The Drive. Bill and Dan with Drew at the controls here in the studio. Our thanks to Jason Caldwell from Auburn Undercover, who was with us for the entire first hour. Hope you had a chance to hear Jason. Man, it's like we ran out of time. It's like things were really moving quickly, but always good to have Jason here in the studio. And if you missed any, then go check out the podcast.
Podcasts of The Drive available wherever you get your favorite podcast. Go to ESPNAU.com and use the podcast center, or go to the your favorite podcasting platform and search for The Drive with Bill Cameron. Should be available wherever you get your favorite podcast, all presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors.
We had fun there in hour number one. If you didn't get a chance to get through, or we haven't heard from you, it's Wednesday, so we're sort of 50-50. I don't know how much looking back we want to do. Auburn's got Arkansas this weekend, and that is quite the challenge. A very prolific offense and a very porous defense.
Did we say this on the air when I pointed out it's like you look at one of the common threads, and you can talk about the officiating if you want to, but one of the common threads of Auburn's four conference losses is that the other team got much better quarterback play in all four of those games.
Yeah, no question.
All four of them. And if that's a deciding factor Saturday, you're nervous.
Auburn's in big trouble because Talen Green is a dangerous, dangerous quarterback with his arm and with his legs.
And he was a terror for Auburn last year in the win at Jordan-Hare. And Bobby Petrino knows how to maximize what Talen Green can do. Mm-hmm. And that's going to be... Yeah, it's going to be a unique challenge for this Auburn defense. I don't know if Arkansas is like
I think Arkansas is the scariest offense that Auburn has played.
The argument that they're the best offense argument. I mean, you could say Georgia probably has better pieces at certain spots. Better running backs. Stockton's good. Georgia's got some receivers too. Maybe a couple. But I would say no.
I just don't think Georgia's not as explosive as Arkansas.
No, they're not.
Offensively.
And I don't think Georgia would get worse if you put Talen Green there at quarterback.
No, not at all.
Instead of
Gunnar Stockton. I mean, he is a tough gamer.
Yeah,
he really is.
Gunnar Stockton's winning games with his arm, and look, I mean, the comeback against Tennessee and the comeback against Ole Miss. Right, like I'm not knocking Gunnar Stockton, but Arkansas, like the win loss record doesn't blow you away, but no, they got some pieces on offense too, and they will be a real challenge for an Auburn defense that has to answer the bell after the heartbreaker. Right, like Auburn's other losses, they weren't. You lost at the buzzer.
Oh no,
you were
right. It wasn't like okay, here it is. You've got a chance. You have a chance, and then you're in overtime. Now you're in double overtime, and you know, all right, you got to make a play right now, or that's it.
It's
game's
like,
over, and it's it. I mean, fourth down play doesn't convert, and shake hands, walk off the field.
Yeah, what example do you want to use? The boy who cried wolf, or the fake when you're playing with a dog and you fake to throw the toy bill and it's like, oh well, we're gonna pretend to, the ball is gonna go for it. He's gonna keep going. At some point they're not gonna go for it anymore, right? And it's like at some point there's just you're not gonna have that bounce back. And I'm hopeful that the Auburn defense can keep bringing the fight.
Quite a challenge. Yep. Yeah, quite a challenge for the Auburn defense, because the Auburn offense is going to have to score.
Yes.
I mean, look, Auburn has done a great job. They have held teams down, but holding Arkansas down means holding them under 30. They've only been held under 30 one time all year. That was Notre Dame, held them to 13. So you can't expect that you're going to hold them like under 20. So Auburn somehow has to score more points than they have in an SEC game this year.
And we're back to the argument. I know we got callers lined up. We're back to the argument we made before the Missouri game. And I know Jackson hit a couple of deep shots in that game and stretched the field a couple of times. You cannot be a 12 yards and in offense. Like, the defenses cannot just – you cannot be easy to defend. Like, our Arkansas has faced some good teams that I would say are not – like, teams that have scored on Arkansas, Bill, are not easy teams to defend.
You look at Ole Miss, Tennessee, and
A&M, Notre Dame.
Yeah.
Like, these are not easy defense. These are not easy. Like, Auburn can't just assume
Auburn is not in those teams' class.
No.
Offensively.
Thus far, no, they're not. And so they need to, like, Auburn needs to find a way to utilize the variety of the offense. You need everything. You need deep shots. You need short shots. You need the inside run, the outside run, the quarterback run. You need all of it against Arkansas, and it's all got to be working, because if Arkansas can take things away, especially deep passes, if Arkansas isn't afraid of you stretching the field and you're trying to beat them 5 yards at a time, you're throwing short on third and long. Like, if that's the plan, then I am.
Hey, that's sort of been the plan, it feels like, most of the year. How many times has Auburn thrown short of the sticks when they've thrown it?
Well, Jackson's yards per attempt is at the bottom of the conference. Yep, I mean, right. I just think Auburn's going to need yards and points. You know, and it's going to really matter. And you're going to need explosive plays. And if you can't do it, Arkansas is going to. That's going to be a real test for the defense.
334-321-1390. That's the Drive hotline sponsored by Skybar. We have a full bank of calls. Who was up first, Drew?
Kevin.
Hey, Kevin, how you doing?
I'm doing good, guys. How about you guys?
All right.
Okay, so I wanted to come back to the point about quarterbacks you guys just made, and bring that to Auburn as a program. So over the last, 10, 15 years, have we ever really seen, like, a quarterback get brought in and truly develop kind of the way these other programs can? Like, kind of like Oklahoma's done with their guys?
Remember, that was a concern. People wondered, was Gus developing quarterbacks?
Yeah, I think Ty Simpson and Gunnar Stockton feel like the best examples in the conference, right? You could point to Nussmeier, too. As far as like a guy who came into a program and developed into a starting quarterback and is now playing really well. A lot of the other guys around the league are transfers or guys who succeeded elsewhere first before coming in. And I wonder how much development credit you get for like John Mateer, right? Or for
Jared Stidham.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, or Stidham. Yeah, Stidham. No, absolutely. You look and I wonder how much of that's just going to kind of be the norm now in college football, where it's like go get your quarterback from the portal. But I mean, you're looking and seeing some developmental projects that are succeeding in college football right now, especially in the SEC. A couple of the best teams in the conference. A&M has an in-house quarterback that they've developed.
Like, he's been there for a while. It's just with Deuce like sitting out this year and not playing. Like, do you guys think we have any reason to believe that he can really take that step up in the next couple of years?
I don't know that right now. I don't know that I have any reason to believe that he will be doing that at Auburn.
Oh, the jump from where Deuce is now to starting quarterback at the beginning of next season is enormous, right? Considering how little he's played so far this year and where he appears to be right now in the pecking order, because when Hugh Freeze talks about making a quarterback change, he's not talking about Deuce.
No, he's talking about Ashton.
More and more.
Ashton, so I mean,
No, I would think, like, if I had to guess how things shake out right now, I would think that next year's starter isn't on Auburn's roster. Like, and you're back on the treadmill. I mean, and you're back where you were when you needed to go find a Peyton Thorne or a Jackson Arnold or, you know, take your pick, right? I think you're back there at least in the short term, unless you see something really promising out of either Jackson or Deuce between now and the end of the season. How could you be anywhere else?
Yeah, but it would seem like if you go out there and trot Jackson out next year at the start of the year, you would get the Peyton Thorne comparison because that's what you did last time. And for good reason, I guess you shouldn't really think it could work out again, right? I mean,
no, if it doesn't work this year, I don't see it extending into next year.
Yeah,
no.
This would be two straight years. If Jackson were to struggle throughout this season, you'd have two straight years of Hugh Freeze saying, I can fix a quarterback, and then that not being the case. And so I think trying to sell a third year of I can fix a quarterback, assuming Hugh Freeze is the coach, like that just feels like it would be a really tall order to like run it back with. Well, unless you saw a lot between now and the end of the season, the thought of running it back next year with Hugh and Jackson is feels like it would be a tough sell.
Well, it did just come out that the ref from the Georgia game was fired, so I could imagine that being brought up as a point for Hugh, where it was like, you know, we should have won the game, blah, blah, blah. Obviously, that's already been used, but this is, like, more official than it
if that is indeed official. Again, we were asked about that. We're talking about it in the first hour. It came out from the Yellowhammer News, and there's been no media outlet that has been able to corroborate that story.
And I would, yeah. It
doesn't
even
mean that it isn't true, but it is very interesting that's the only place you're seeing it.
And I would just, yeah, I'd be careful at sort of looking at, I don't know if you're necessarily looking at the right things if you look at any of the four Auburn games in conference and take away, Auburn was the better team, they made enough plays to win, and it was just taken away from them by the referees.
No, absolutely not. I don't think you can say that at all.
Yeah, no, I think that some folks want to take solace in, like, you almost made enough plays to steal the Oklahoma game, or you almost made enough plays to steal the, you know, one of these conference games, but you didn't outplay the other team.
No, by any means, no. I mean, it's, like, the pick that Arnold threw, that would have been a pick six. Like, that was Oklahoma dropping the ball. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, no, appreciate it. We were just
good
talking
stuff,
about, the path to a year four, and it just feels like you're not going to be able to legislate your way there.
The path to a year four is win, and then win, and then there's Alabama. But, I mean, you're still going to have to navigate through Saturday, which is going to be tough, go to Nashville in 2 weeks after that, as well as beat a Kentucky team that, you know, took Texas to overtime this past week. So look, don't worry. Nobody should be worrying about year four yet. I mean, you've got to try to get through year three.
I do think. I mean, look, and knowing nothing about how any of, like, without any idea of how Ashton or Deuce would look if they went in, like, without trying to make any sort of proclamations. I know we got callers hanging on.
Yeah.
But like, I do sort of understand why folks thinking about the future think that there's more upside in playing Deuce than playing Ashton if you make a quarterback change.
I can definitely see that.
Yeah, and with Ashton, it's like, not only do you have the limited eligibility issue of it, but you would also have the question of, like, if Ashton goes in and plays well, it's like folks are gonna rightfully ask what took so long to get him in the game.
Yeah, it wouldn't be the first time though. I mean, we've seen a lot of guys get opportunities where it didn't feel like they had a chance at all. You know, we were talking a while ago with Jason. You know, Stetson Bennett, where was he on the Georgia depth chart? None of the Georgia coaches thought he would ever play for them.
Guys had to play.
Ends up being a national championship quarterback.
Guys had to play their way out of the job for Stetson to get a shot.
All right, let's get back to the Drive Hotline, and Yellowhammer is up next. Hey, Yellowhammer.
Hey, Hammer.
Hey, afternoon. So, picking up your description of Arkansas, which has a prolific offense but a sad little defense.
Oh, yeah.
And if we look at the basic dynamics of the game where their prolific offense is going against our pretty good defense and our so-so offense is going against their so-so defense. You know, there's the four basic things.
Oh, it's strength against strength and not strength against, yeah, it's weakness against weakness and strength against strength.
Yeah, and so how do you feel like that might wash out?
Again, the game's in Fayetteville, and I feel like they have less pressure on them. They're playing a little looser with Bobby Petrino, who is trying to make a case for being, you know, their full-time head coach once again. Auburn's got to be feeling the pressure now because, I mean, the expectations for Auburn were so much higher than they were for Arkansas.
We're going to see, Yellowhammer, how much of Auburn's offensive struggles are because they played four high-quality defenses the last couple of games and how much of it is because of deeper underlying problems with the Auburn offense.
Four things. There was a guy named Jack called in last week talking about depth. You have people like Georgia, Oklahoma, and, Ohio State, and Alabama. They have had repeated top fivers every year recruiting-wise, where we're digging out of a hole, you know. And so we just don't have the depth to field with those teams that are up there in that upper echelon. And then we got three things problematic. We have the offensive line a little bit. We have the play calling is a little squirrely. And then we have the quarterback being, you know, taking way too much time. And he's overcautious. That's why he's never thrown an interception. He's not going to put it out there.
Well, and he has now. That streak is right, over after the first quarter against.
He had one. Oh,
yeah,
okay.
he did
well,
throw
that's
one.
Good. That's freeing. That's liberating.
Yeah, well, maybe that's why he did play a little better.
Maybe that was a load off a little bit. Although again, it didn't necessarily translate to the rest of the entire game. But no, I think the quality of the opponents Auburn has faced in the last couple of weeks, that's something else. And we appreciate the phone call, Yellowhammer. That's something else.
Thanks.
that will be tested out when you face Arkansas.
Arkansas's offense will be the best that Auburn has played in the SEC. Their defense is definitely the worst.
And I'm skeptical. I don't reject it outright. I'm skeptical that you can attribute all of Auburn's offensive problems to they played four of the top 20 defenses in college football, and that's why the struggles were what they were. I think maybe some of it, you know, maybe Auburn will see maybe they'll see considerably better results the next couple of weeks.
Auburn drove for, Auburn's offense really scored 3 points against Texas A&M. Remember? I mean, they had the interception return to the 3-yard line to set them up to get them to 10. Arkansas scored 42 against Texas A&M.
Yeah.
Scored 42 against Texas A&M. So,
And I think A&M's approach offensively was a little bit different. I mean, they still threw the ball because they threw the interception to, you know, for Atkins. But I wonder how much they felt like they needed to turn up the pressure and score. You know, I think teams.
I think they felt Auburn was not going to drive and score, so they could just run the clock.
I think Georgia had a little bit of that too after they took the lead in the second half.
Arkansas, by the way, is averaging 514 yards per game in total offense. They give up 444. So I mean. Yes, points are absolutely critical on Saturday morning. 334-321-1390. We need to get to our first break of hour number two. We've got calls holding right back with them here on the Wednesday Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck.
Auburn IT delivers professional IT support.
And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Wednesday Drive. Bill and Dan here in the studio with Drew at the controls. And, we were talking with Jason a little while ago, obviously, in hour number one, and he's going to be in Fayetteville this weekend here in town. Got Banana Ball coming in on Saturday, but Saturday's also Serps up over in Polka.
It is a local tradition, unlike any other.
It's really great. I mean, there's all kinds of crafts and some delicious food.
Syrup sopping at Pioneer Park. I mean, this thing is 50 plus years consecutive. Lee County Historical Society is I mean, you can take a step back in time. Lots of, I mean, some delicious food.
Right? Oh,
I
mean, absolutely.
I mean, all your like carnival festival sort of classics,
delicacies. There are all kinds of biscuits though.
Drew, you a kettle corn guy? Yeah, Drew. Yeah, that's. I mean, there's some
and something that wasn't available a few years ago. I believe there's some. I believe they're going to be shuttles this year, because used to be. I mean, there's so many folks that go, and you park all along 14 on the way going in, and it used to. You know, sometimes it would be a pretty good hike.
Oh, and folks are there early because of the
because the
breakfasts, right? And what's the, is it Brunswick stew later on? Mm-hmm. I know there's mm-hmm. that's always a big one too. So yeah, check out Serpsoppen this weekend for sure.
And there's music as well. 334-321-1390. That is the Drive hotline, sponsored by Skybar. Let's get back to it. And Bill is up next. Hey, Bill.
Hey, guys. I was some of your previous callers kind of touched on what I was going to say, but I'll say it anyway. I always got the impression that Deuce Knight was kind of the future of the program, but you don't hear anybody talking about him playing. Mm. The next one up, and I've always thought that was kind of odd. Maybe he just needs more seasoning, but
well, I think the plan, Bill, was, first of all, the plan was not to be 3-4 at this point. Expectation was Auburn's going to have 5 or 6 wins at least by now, and Deuce would be getting groomed, and you'd try to get him in few enough ball games to still have a red shirt, but enough to be able to get his feet wet. But that plan is obviously gone by the wayside. And then Auburn brought in Ashton Daniels from Stanford. I was a little surprised when we first heard that the plan was to redshirt him, because I wondered, well, okay, so who's the number two guy in case you need a second quarterback? But you're right, it has been it's been pretty noticeable that recently, you know, over the last week or two, when Hugh Freeze has been asked about, you know, making a change, he really hasn't mentioned Deuce. He's mentioned Ashton more.
Yeah, that's kind of strange. I mean, of course, everything about this season has been kind of strange.
Yeah, but you're right about that.
I don't really I hope they win Saturday, but I don't have a lot of faith in what's going
to
happen.
It's hard
then,
to. It's hard to right now.
It is. And you guys know I go to a lot of games, and I just it's just I hope they win Saturday. I really do. But
they really need to. You're absolutely right.
I feel bad for the players and who put the work in, and of course the fans at Auburn that go to these games. And a lot of these people, they struggle to go to these games, you know, monetarily.
It's not easy. Yeah, you're right.
And it's a different, Bill, you know better than most. Like, it's a different kind of disappointment than you experienced in like 2012. Right, when it's the team's,
that was just hopeless.
Yeah, when the team's getting demolished and doesn't seem to be SEC caliber on either side of the ball, you know, when they're facing a team
with a pulse. There's more frustration in this one because you know that this team should be better.
And that's where I can't help but wonder, and the example I've pointed to a lot, Bill, is 2008, where it's like, I think there's a lot of good players on this team, but if you don't have the right approach, and if there's a disconnect between the play calling and what the quarterback does well and what you can do as an offense, if you're limited there and you don't have options you can go to, like, it's tough to be a bottom four team at quarterback and anything but a bottom four team overall in the SEC now. Like, it is,
and you're right, Dan. And the sad part of the whole thing is we're going to play Kentucky and Arkansas in the next few weeks. And the winner stays out of the bottom of the SEC. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And I don't think that's where Auburn needs to be.
No, you're right. Auburn, Arkansas, and Kentucky are the winless teams. And somebody's going to get a win this week. And then, you know, if Auburn doesn't get a win this week, then again – next week, it's likely that somebody's going to be gunning for their first win.
Yeah, and you looked at Kentucky and Arkansas and thought, well, those are programs that only care about basketball. What's, you know, you're you know, Auburn, it's different.
Yeah, I don't think Kentucky's getting a win this weekend either. They've got Tennessee.
But, you know, they took Texas to overtime.
Yes, they did.
I never saw that coming.
Mm-hmm. No, but, you know, Texas has something in common with Auburn.
They've
got a quarterback that at times holds the ball a little bit a little longer than anybody ever thought he would.
I wonder how – I know they beat Oklahoma. I wonder how many good teams Texas beats between now and the end of the season.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I enjoy the show, guys, and the Wardle.
Appreciate it, Bill.
Great stuff, Bill.
334-321-1390. Brian is next. Hey, Brian.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
All right.
I'm going to go on a rant real quick just because me and my brother, we talk about this all the time. First off, Hugh Freeze is failing. All right. The reason I say that, as a football coach myself, been doing it 12 years, coached all the way from 5-year-olds to semi-pro, three different things. His number one job is to put our players in the best possible position to win. And by keeping Jackson Arnold on the field for this long, he is failing. Love Jackson. I think he's a great kid. I think he's got the potential to be a good quarterback. But he needs some work. Now, if we get out there and Ashton Daniels gets out there and we win the next five games, how much more upset are we going to be that he took that long to put Ashton Daniels in after, you know, this stretch that we just had? Why have we not seen him yet? Why have we not seen Deuce Knight? Why don't we run up the score 50-0 against South Alabama and Ball State and get some of these guys in so we can see what they can actually do? I don't understand it. It's blowing my mind. Why is that left tackle, I can't remember his name, the guy who had the hearing problem,
Xavier Chaplin,
why is he still out on the field? That blows my – we have two tall. Throw his butt out there. Dude had like five holding penalties over three games and an ungodly amount of false starts. And how many times did he get beat, which was just uncountable at this point? He's not as good as what we're paying him. Why is he on the field?
Hey, Brian, can I
– putting players that can get it done on the field.
Can I ask, like, is there a moment for you where you would have made the switch with Jackson to a different quarterback? Jason was talking about halftime of the A&M game as a moment where he thought, you know, maybe Auburn needed a refresh. I was – the closest I've come all year to saying push the button was I thought Jackson, that last drive of the first half against Missouri – you absolutely needed to show something then, or it was going to be tough to come out of halftime with anything but a different quarterback based on what you'd seen at that point. But I'm wondering where your moment was where you thought, or maybe it was the Missouri game. I know some folks that said overtime against Missouri was when they'd finally decided they'd seen enough.
You know, honestly, for me, it started in Oklahoma, but I kind of gave him a little bit of grace because, you know, all the smack talk and he's coming back to Norman and all this other crap, gave him a little bit of grace. But when he missed that wide-open receiver downfield against Texas A&M, I immediately called my brother. I was like, sit his butt. If he can't look downfield, if he's constantly looking short because that's all he's willing to throw, sit him down. He makes that throw. We win. That's 7 points. The guy was wide open, wasn't nobody within 10 yards around him. He just didn't see him because he's afraid to let it fly, unless it's to Cam Coleman, and even then he still overthrows it.
Well, he didn't overthrow him this past week, but no.
No, he did.
You're
he did.
Right.
He hit him. I'm talking about in Oklahoma when he
no, you're right.
That,
you're right.
That stutter step. I mean, all you had to do is put just a little bit of air underneath it and mm-hmm. let him go get it. I mean, he had him beat by five steps. So, look, again, I think Jackson has the potential to be a good quarterback. He's just not quite there yet.
And sometimes it's better to have those guys, you know, come sit for a little bit and see somebody else out there. You saw Alabama after Ty Simpson struggled against Florida State. They went with what's the kid's name? They went early in the next ball game to Austin Mack. And Ty Simpson has been phenomenal since then. I'm not saying that would happen with Jackson, but sometimes it's good for a guy to come over and see somebody else out there and realize, hey, that you know, I've got to be better than this and not just hear about it, but feel the consequences.
Well, and on the flip side of that, though, you can really find out what a guy's made out of when you do that.
Yep.
If he's going to lay down and cry and whine, then you know you don't want him playing no how.
Hmm. No, and that's something, I mean.
Is he going to fight for that position, or is he going to sit down and say, oh, boo-hoo, let me look for the next team?
And you would think Jackson would understand that based on the season he had last year. Right, and the fact that's what happened to him, and that's something, you know, and that's another indictment of this season is and the Oklahoma the Oklahoma quarterback that beat Auburn last year is fine. I don't know if he's necessarily anybody's idea of the guy backing up Mateer.
Yeah,
is He's not you know, anybody's idea of is Hawkins.
Hawkins, right? Michael Hawkins Jr.
Yeah. Like, but I mean, Oklahoma saw three quarters of Jackson Arnold playing like this in conference, and went to Hawkins, and didn't go back to Arnold until Hawkins got hurt, right? So I mean, it was like they for a lot of the reasons you're describing, Brian, they went to somebody else pretty early in the season last year in Norman.
I mean, realistically, what it comes down to is, and this is what I would love to see. I like Hugh Freeze. I think he is a great recruiter. I think he is a good program manager. He is a crap play caller. I want to know if it was Jackson Arnold that checked out of a play into a run on that third and six in overtime, or if it was a designed run and he checked to another run. I don't know. Either way, it was idiotic.
Yeah.
It pissed me off. That's number one. But we need somebody who's going to get some fire in our offense. When Harsin got fired, Cadillac Williams took over. We weren't the greatest in the world, but the way they were acting on the sideline, you would have thought that we were. I mean, those guys were fired up. We need somebody like that. We need a Rhett Lashley. We need a Cadillac Williams. We need somebody that's going to help these boys dig down deep, find some grit, and get the damn job done. Sorry for language.
No, it's reminiscent of, you know, I read a breakdown of like what's gone wrong for Florida. If you look at the coaches they've gone through since Meyer. And it does feel like every time they make a change, they make a course correction. Oh, okay, that guy wasn't enough of a recruiter, or that guy wasn't an offensive genius. So let's go to the offensive genius. Mm-hmm. Let's go back to the defensive guy. Oh well, he didn't recruit as well. And it's like, and I wonder, like, what the lessons would be of if you're going to course correct from this. What are you going to prioritize if there's a coaching search soon? What would you prioritize in that you didn't get from Hugh Freeze? And I wonder if it's offensive sophistication in your play calling and something a little bit more forward thinking from an offensive standpoint.
Here's what I would do is, honestly, I would, in my personal opinion, I would keep Hugh as the head coach and then have him say, hey, look, we have to find somebody else at the OC position, or you have to give up play calling to our OC. One or the other. Pick your battles. Because, again, he's a heck of a recruiter, and I think he's a great coach. But I think he needs a little bit of help when it comes to play calling. I honestly, there's got to be a system out there somewhere that Jackson can run with his abilities. He's got the leg. He's got the arm whenever he's willing to let go of it. But the short throws that are open, he's just not throwing it. I mean, I don't know if he's looking for the home run at certain points or if he's, you know, checking down, whatever he's doing for certain points of the game, or if they're just giving him, hey, one decision, and that's why he's holding on to it so long.
Do you think Hugh Freeze can continue to be a good recruiter at Auburn without on-field results? Because I wonder if that well's dry now, because you were selling people on this year.
Yeah, that's right. Well, if he is around to recruit next year, Auburn will have had to have turned the corner and won ball games here down the stretch. My concern is, could he really turn it over to somebody else? It sure felt like a couple of years ago that things seemed to be going okay, but when there was a little bump, it felt like Hugh sort of pushed Philip Montgomery aside and took back over.
He was a good recruiter because he was recruiting to the dynamic, explosive Hugh Freeze offense.
That's true.
100%. And honestly, so goes back to that question I asked earlier. How mad are we going to be if Ashton Daniels comes out? Say he comes out in the second quarter and throws for 350 yards in three quarters. How upset are we going to be that he didn't make the change sooner?
Well, I don't know. I mean,
he's got 1,100 yards running and 3,300 yards passing at Stanford.
Yeah, no, that's a fair question. Is that influencing? You know, and we appreciate the phone call. You know, it really interesting stuff there. But is it? Yeah, is the possibility of? I mean, can that even factor in at all?
I'll say this. If you win the next five, you'll get over being mad. If you win the next five and Ashton Daniels is fabulous, yeah, you'll go, why didn't you do that earlier? But I'll live with an 8-4 season right now.
And I think,
seriously.
And I think you can, you could sit him for Mercer and have him back next year? Yeah. Is that the thinking? That if that were the, I mean, look, I'd push any button that you think works. At this point, when it comes to...
Something needs to work Saturday.
Yeah, boat's taking on water.
We need to get to our bottom of the hour break. Back with more of your phone calls here on the Wednesday Drive.
ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into The Drive. 18 minutes away from 6 o'clock and right back to the phones we go. And James is next. Hey, James.
Hey, guys.
Hey, bud.
So I've been wanting to call in the last couple of weeks. I've got a lot to say, but I can't say it all in one time. So I just the only thing I've really got to say, I don't know what the issues are. It looks ridiculous. I figured it would have turned around by now. I think the thing that makes me madder the most is we got people like Kevin Skarbinski going on radio shows and everywhere else saying that Auburn's not committed to winning a championship and we're basically wanting to be like Mississippi State and all this other stuff. I didn't know we wasn't committed because, you know, getting all these five-star players and building a performance center for the football.
Auburn has invested I don't know millions about, so. And millions into being able to compete at the highest level.
I agree. I just don't know where he's getting it from. So makes no sense to me, but whatever.
Now knowing Kevin a little bit, though, I would say his point is not going to be that Auburn can't win. His point is going to be Auburn needs the right coach.
That Auburn should win. Yeah, and Auburn needs to make a move.
Yeah, and yes. That Auburn can't deny if you've seen enough with Hugh Freeze, and it's clear that he's not the guy to get you there. Don't kid yourself and keep him around because it's financially inconvenient to fire him or because it's politically difficult or because he's got the right friends or something like that. I would, and again, I haven't seen the exact like radio hits. I haven't heard the exact radio hits you're talking about with Skarbinski, but I've known and followed him long enough and read some of his stuff recently to tell you like he still thinks Auburn has everything a program needs administratively to win. You just need the right people in charge of the right spots.
Yeah, he said it yesterday on Doug Amos's show, Max Roundtable, and I couldn't believe he said it. So, you know, it's like we're not.
Well, I mean, look. The reality is Auburn football since COVID. I heard somebody today saying Auburn's in danger. Mm-hmm. Of falling to the Mississippi State level. Mississippi State has a better record mm-hmm. than Auburn does since COVID. I mean, Vandy is the only SEC team with fewer conference wins since COVID, and that could change. Auburn could drop to the bottom here over the next couple of weeks. They're that close. So, I mean, it's not like, oh, they're in danger of being mediocre. Auburn football has been.
And I would say, if you're talking about, getting back to Skarbinski, I would say his argument would be keeping Hugh Freeze, if you're John Cohen, keeping Hugh Freeze in the face of these results is something that would be acceptable at Mississippi State but should not be acceptable at Auburn.
I agree with that. I do agree with that because it doesn't make any sense why we keep him if we – if we know we're going to get rid of him later, then we need to get rid of him now. You know, and I love the guy. I think he's a great guy. I just don't understand what happened.
Yeah.
And I'm starting to wonder if his health is a big issue of it, you know. So, because we all know he's got health issues. So, I mean, I don't know what to say in that, you know.
I sort of get back to what Jake Crane said yesterday. That maybe he's too nice a guy.
I just keep coming back to, I think he did I think a lot of what Hugh Freeze did, if this is like, if we're near the end and a change is coming soon, I would say that a description of it would be, he did a lot of things right and guessed wrong at quarterback two seasons in a row. And you can have a lot of the right pieces. You can have 20, can have 21 of the right starters. But if you don't have the right one at quarterback, that's the difference. The biggest difference between the 2008 team and the 2010 team at Auburn is that you've got an all-time great at quarterback in one season, and you don't have SEC-caliber quarterback playing another season. One of those teams goes undefeated. The other one finishes in last place. And I keep thinking this is a year where he did. I mean, there are – when people talk about Auburn being loaded, like they're going position by position, right, and talking about all the exciting young talent – but if you don't have You know, look at the places Pavia played at before he got there and after he got there. Like it's the most important spot, and if you don't have the right guy there, it can feel like you're spinning your wheels at a lot of the other spots.
Couldn't agree more.
Great stuff. Guys. Yeah.
Appreciate the call. We'll get to our final break. Dak, hang on, you're up when we come back for the final segment of the Wednesday Drive.
U.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email us at thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back in. Final segment of the Wednesday drive and right back to the drive. Hotline and Dak, thanks for hanging on.
Hey, bud.
Hey, buddy. How y'all doing?
All right.
Good to hear from you, Dak.
Yeah, man. And I'm glad I was able to listen today. So I want to ask the people, how many quarterbacks will it take that we go through before we realize that it maybe is not the quarterback is the problem, all right? I mean, we had a quarterback that was almost an all-conference player at Michigan State. He comes here and gets thrown under the bus both years, okay? Then we had another quarterback that was on campus that we played and ruined him in one game, all right? So now we get this guy that was the top quarterback in the country out of high school, all right? And I think Oklahoma has the same issues that we're having right now. I don't truly think they have an offense coordinator that's doing anything, okay? So I want to ask this. Do you think if Jackson Arnold was at Ole Miss right now with Lane Kiffin, do you think he'd be stinking it up right now?
That is a really good question. Lane would probably. The thing is, he'd give him a shot.
I'll tell you what. He would not have been able to stink it up for multiple games in a row.
That is right
for Lane Kiffin.
Exactly
Lane,
right,
guys. Lane Kiffin has had since he's been there 5 different quarterbacks, and all 5 of them was almost either all conference player or newcomer of the year. And he's got a guy that played at what Division III last year, he's on his way to be an all conference.
My hypothetical there wouldn't be Lane Kiffin is the genius that could fix like a Jackson Arnold or a Robbie Ashford. I think he's much better at picking the quarterbacks than some of the guys that Auburn has had lately.
That goes into it too. But guys, when you're and look, I'm not talking about when I go back to talking about 2-minute drill. And being successful. I'm not talking about winning all these games. What I'm talking about is actually moving the ball downfield, okay, and having a chance. 12 total games in the 2.5 years so far, we've been in that situation. And not only have we not moved it downfield, guys, we hadn't even gotten a first down. Yeah. In 12 opportunities, 12 different games.
You had the go-ahead drive against Oklahoma in the fourth quarter, and since then, offense in the fourth quarter and the overtime period against Missouri has been a disaster over the last 4 games.
It has. And you don't ever take sacks. I don't want to go back there. But anyway, now I want
to
talk about.
That's all you have to say.
No, you're right.
No, sacks in critical moments has been one of the biggest problems.
That's right. So now let's talk about offense and the head coach being offense coordinator. He's never going to give that up. He's just like Gus. Let me tell you something, guys. It's like a chess player. I've been there. I've been a head coach. I've been an offense coordinator. It's tough to give it up because you're in your mindset, you want to prove that you're better than that guy across the field, and that some guys will never give it up. If we take in Rhett Lashley, we're going to get the same thing, okay? I think, personally, if we do go a different route, we're better off getting a defensive-minded coach and hiring an offensive coordinator because things don't change with those guys. They're never going to change. And
you're not married to one offensive system with a defensive head coach
in the way that you are when you
– and even if it's a good system, a lot of people like Alex Golish. Right at South
That's
Florida.
Right.
But if you bring him
That's
in
right.
as your new head coach, you're married to that
That's
offensive
right.
system.
If things don't work, then what? And there you go.
Guys, Hugh Freeze, and I love him. He's a great person. I think he's a good coach. I would love to see him be the coach and give up and hire an offense coordinator, okay? But let's face the facts. He only had really early, 2012, 2013, he only had two or three years there where he lit it up. He had the perfect quarterback. Also, he was doing things that nobody had seen yet. Just like Gus, after about 4 or 5 years, people figure it out. Where do they go from there? You see what I'm? You see where I'm going with this?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Things get stale.
Or people figure things out.
There's a reason day old bread is half off, Dak. Right? Like things over time. The book. I mean, remember how the revolutionary the Wildcat was. Right. Although no one's ever seen this, it's the Wildcat. And then a couple years later, like now you try the Wildcat, a defense will kind of laugh to themselves at what you're attempting.
I go back to this. If we do go a different direction, we need people that know football that looks at the big picture. Okay. I said in 2015 when Lane Kiffin was at Alabama, I was begging for him. And then when he went to South Florida or wherever, Florida International, then I was begging for Sarkisian before somebody gets him. But because these two guys had little knocks in their past 10, 15 years ago, we're too good to go after a guy to give him a second chance. If the smart people are smart, they're going to pick up the phone and ask Nick Saban, hey, who is the best three young coaches out there that you would look at as a head coach? I mean, because you can say what you want to about him. He didn't look at a guy's pass.
No.
He gave them second chances. And he turned the offense over to them and let them do what they needed to do to be successful. And he looked at young guys and brought them in. Lanning, all these guys. I could go on and on. That's what we need to do if we're going to go in a different direction.
I like it, Dak. Good stuff.
Great stuff, Dak. Again, we are out of time. What a fast show today.
How about it?
You can tell there's...
'Tis the season,
you know,
Bill.
I don't need to hear from people. Auburn's just apathetic about football these days. All right, we're back tomorrow. Ferg going to be with us?
Yep.
Good deal. We'll talk to you then. Have a good one, everybody. We are out of here.